The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Sportage. When you drive your new Kia Sportage, prepare to be noticed. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Sportage. Peace of mind as standard. Quality guaranteed. Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Now, have a listen to this. Well, listen.
When you try your best but you don't succeed. When you get what you want but not what you need. When you feel so tired but you can't sleep. Stuck in reverse. And the tears come streaming down your face. When you lose something you can't replace. When you love someone but it goes to waste. Could it be will guide you home and ignite your bones, and I will try to fix you.
Ah, yes, where would you get lyrics like that? Ignite your bones. That, of course, is Coldplay. And as you all know by now, Chris Martin, the main man with Coldplay, has announced his separation from, or they have announced that they are to separate, Gwyneth Paltrow being his other half. That song, Fix You, was actually dedicated to Gwyneth. It was written about 8 or 9, 10 years ago. And in the wake of their announcement of their separation, there has been a lot of intrigue about what's been called by their advisors conscious uncoupling. So we're going to talk a little bit about that this morning. Lisa O'Hara is a couple counsellor and psychotherapist here in Dublin. And Lisa, presumably when you heard the news, you were intrigued by it.
I was, and I just thought it was an odd way to describe separating and the journey of separation for anybody who is going through it. I think when looking into it a little bit more deeply, I think the lady that coined the phrase described it as a releasing the trauma of a breakup, reclaiming your power and reinventing your life.
I see. Right. Yeah. Very grand indeed, the whole operation. But in a way, they are so public and when public figures like this announce something like this, it has to be difficult.
Well, it is, and I'd say it was just masterminded very carefully. But I think really when you stand back, you know, there are just two people who met at a very vulnerable time in her life. Her dad had just died. I think it was just after her dad
That's
died.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, even listening to the words there, I mean, he was her knight in shining armour. Mm. And she was the damsel in distress. So in a way, it was a nice little fit.
Yes.
But, you know, they were still human in the end. And, you know, I guess really when we look at the, just for a moment, even looking at the life, the stages of over the life of a relationship, you know, you meet, you fall in love. It's when passion's at its greatest, and we ignore the red flags, and then we move into an habituation phase where the differences start to appear, and you realise that, you know, God, they're not perfect, and they forgot to pay the bills, and they didn't do this for me, they didn't turn into the person I wanted them to be, and, you know, they're just two people trying to work through their differences. But I think that's the stage also when the most is asked for them. I mean, they may be making huge life decisions, changing decisions without children, you know, negotiating their roles and whatever. And so it's requiring them to be very adult. It's at this stage, really, they kind of move into a sort of a stage where, you know, the battle of wills, it becomes a, you know, there's two ways to go, your way and my way, which is the right way. And, you know, they could stay a long time very entrenched in that. And they may make one of maybe three decisions. One to resign yourself to the status quo and you may lead separate lives. The second way might be if it's not gone on too long and there's enough goodwill to spend some time reinvesting in healthier and more satisfying ways of relating to each other. And the third way, which they decided was to separate.
But they're separating, but they're also saying that they have never been closer, which is a bit bizarre. It's a bit of a bizarre thing to say, isn't it? That if they're going their own separate ways and to say in the next sentence, you know, we have never been so close. That's a little bit hard to sort of get your head around.
Yeah, or has the tension dropped? Do you know, when they may have been, it can feel like a tug of war, you know, with that separation piece. You know, again, it's like, you know, I want to stay together, no, I want to separate. But when they both agree to go one way or the other, there can be a kind of a drop in the tension and that there may be peace there at that stage. You know, finally, we've made the decision.
And in your experience, when you mentioned the three options, what do most people go for in your experience?
Well, I think we're starting to see more of a mix. I think maybe 30, 40 years ago, couples just knuckled down. There was no separation. You didn't do it because it was a very isolating thing to do and it went against our society's values. But I think we are seeing people now, especially coming into couple counselling, and they're just saying, you know, we're in trouble. We've done everything we can. We just don't know what to do anymore. And even going into counselling can feel like an admission of failure. We couldn't work this out ourselves. But I think they're very brave, and I think most couple counsellors will say that. It's an incredibly brave decision because it could go one way or the other, and who knows what it could unearth.
Why so brave?
Because they may actually, you can deny a lot. You know, you can sort of say, you know, you can gloss over a lot. But when you come into counselling, it all gets slowed down and the counsellor may start to ask questions that they may have been avoiding. And the counsellor may pick up things that are kind of unspoken, it's what's not being said. So it's a great risk. But with that comes a deeper understanding, maybe realising that there may have been misunderstandings and that a whole lot has tumbled in on the back of that, that has really been very destructive for the relationship. So it is an opportunity really to have the relationship you want. Mm-hmm. That all depends though on how much goodwill is there.
Between the two?
Yeah, have they gone too far? Because on average, couples don't go seek help for about 6 years.
After the trouble?
Yeah, it's a long time to be unhappy.
That's interesting. 6 years they wait. Yeah, they know there's something going wrong in their relationship. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, while you've been talking away, we've been joined by two other experts on the subject of relations. Yeah. Mary McAvoy, great to have you in.
Good morning, John.
And John Kenny. How are you, John? Well, I don't know why you're giggling.
Expert.
If you commit a little beer to the microphone there, John.
Quietly stole up on your guest here. Hi, how are you doing?
You're both very welcome. And Mary and John will be forming an alliance shortly, an alliance on stage with the matchmaker, which is apt for this morning's discussion. Mary, what about that? We've been just talking to Lisa about the nature of relationships and what works and what doesn't work. Have you any great wisdom to offer us on the subject?
Well, I do, but I'd have to go on for a very long time, so I better not do that. I think in general, myself, the counselling aspect of it seems very interesting to me. I do think people tend nowadays to bail too early. Mm. And to not see the value in working through your problems, you know. And that's not to say you should stay in an abusive relationship or anything like that. But, I mean, I've never been married, but I am with the same person for 26 years. And I certainly hope if I'm around for another 26 that I'll be with the same person for 26 years. And part of that is just kind of realising that it's not happy ever after. It's, you know, you're happy sometimes and sometimes you have bad times and you stick at it. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that obviously relationships do break down irretrievably, genuinely. But certainly I think people don't see the value in working through the hardship. They're not prepared to go through the hardship that there is at times. And for the illumination you get at the end of it if you stick with it, do you know what I mean?
Did you encounter hardship then in those 26 years?
Well, God, hardship. We experience the normal ups and downs that anybody experiences. You know, where you know the person that you love more than anything else in the world on both sides. Do you know what I mean? Him and me. You know, driving you mad and you kind of go, and him the same, you know, and all of those things and family pressures and the different things and, you know, that people go through and the different sort of, you know, on a broader family thing as well, because there could be an awful lot of pressure there as well. And you just kind of say, this is like a trough, and eventually the graph will go up again. And that's what tends to happen. But I think, say, when you were talking about anger, you know, not, we weren't talking about anger, but, you know, when people wait, say, 6 years to resolve a problem, that there's an awful lot of stuff that goes in. Like, I think, you know, that can't be resolved because it's just gone too deep. I think... I'm spiritually educated as a Buddhist, right? And Buddhism always says you're responsible for your own life, not anyone else. And actually, that makes a huge difference, because I think anyway, because then you're kind of, you're going, how do I feel about something? It's not, how is that person making me feel? How do I feel? And it's, there's great clarity in that, because then you don't go into blaming someone else.
And how long is it? How long? What part of the 26 years have you been a Buddhist? All
27.
27, right?
Yeah.
So you entered the relationship as a Buddhist.
As a Buddhist.
With all that entails.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say that illuminated my relationship from the beginning. Yeah.
I see. And is your other half a Buddhist?
He says he is. I call him a Buddhist.
A Buddhist.
A Buddhist.
A Buddhist, right. John, you have your arms folded there. You're sitting back enjoying it all.
I am indeed.
You're not a Buddhist, John, are you? No.
No. But sure, like ever, I've dabbled. You know, be putting on with my little bowl and I'd be making sounds with it and stuff. And No, it's interesting, really, because it's funny. But like my son was thinking about doing a driving test, you know. And to get his license, he has to read a book and he has to do a course and he has to do this and he has to do... You can't just go out and drive a car anymore. And, you know, when you take it, like, we do an awful lot of things like that in life. And for one of the biggest things we ever do in life, there's actually no education for it. Not even in school. I mean, when you go to school, you're preparing you for adulthood. Huge part of adulthood. Most people do get into relationships in their late teens, early 20s. There's actually nothing about what you might call... what is the most... which is supposed to be the foundation of our society, because everyone goes on about the family and all this, you know, and like, oh, right, there's a structure, it's an order, we need that, otherwise, you know, other, they say we'll have chaos. Well, whether we do or not, we're not sure. But it's funny how there's so little sort of a prep done towards of it, any sort of a, in a serious way. It's kind of, it's done here and there in little bits, but really it is for most people. It is a huge, it's the next step for an awful lot of people, is this walking into another relationship. And really, like, there's more time given to some other subjects, which there are. The schools are full of subjects. It's like personal development. Where does that really come into it? You know, it's all like, well, does it get you a job? No, but can it make you happy in life? Yeah, probably can, and probably very happy. Yeah. But we are the whole time, even in our system, the way we approach it seems to be neglected, you know?
Yeah.
And it's to me, it's just a very simple, practical thing, really. But we're not very good at being practical. I think we over kind of... Everything is... I don't know. And then when it's too... It becomes all very kind of academic or something like that in the end process. Whereas really, it is, should be something quite very natural, something that we learn to do very naturally and deal with naturally, like talking. I wasn't a great man. I was a good sulker now for a long time.
Yeah.
In your relationship?
Yeah.
Because just to explain,
and not all the time.
You met Margie and within a couple of weeks you were married. Am I right to say that?
Well, we were met a while, but our process actually tying the knot came. We were just at home and Chris was, what we do next? We said we get married. So we got married the next month. In the space of 4 weeks, and we went to the local priest, and he thought there was trouble in the way. Like, sure, you get married in a hurry. But it was, in a sense, that we felt it was the next step for us, and we'd spend a bit of time together, and we were both mature enough. And and it was like that. I suppose we didn't get into a panic over it either. I suppose there is a sense that there's an ease about, you know, let's take it, and that's not being too kind of flippant about it or anything, but. I suppose we didn't get caught up in the whole kind of hysteria of like, the wedding is what it's about.
Yeah.
The wedding is not. Some people plan to spend 3 years planning a wedding, like, you know, for a couple of hours, really.
Yeah.
The wedding is one thing. It's maybe what goes on in the meantime and afterwards.
Which I just coincidentally, you're actually with Margie 26 years.
I am, yeah, more even, she tells me.
You mentioned the sulking phase.
Yeah.
Did that form a large part of, did that last
few years?
No,
it's funny, but it's...
What has sustained you?
It's a kind of called growing up, John, you know, and God, we never stopped growing up, you know. And I remember it was probably just listening to you talk there about counselling and that. And I said, because thanks be to God, we've never had to avail of it. But, and like you, I admire people who do it because it means that they feel there's something worth salvaging in a relationship,
yes,
you know,
yeah.
which is very important. But, like, even for me, like, a sulk would be a kind of thing that, well, I'm upset, like, you know,
because
I'm the only one in the world, like, you know. And it's true, you know.
But how would Margie respond?
Well, she was great. She's an almighty patient altogether, like, you know what I mean? She's a great woman. And I don't know how she put up with me, but I do it myself. It would be a way that I would kind of react to things, you know what I mean, would to go quiet.
Yeah, I'm a sulker too.
It's awful,
Oh,
and that's awful
silent,
in a relationship.
Silence.
Hopefully I don't do it anymore. No, I got over that, but it took me a while, you know.
Yes, I'm a martyr sulker.
What's that?
Oh, God, you know what you did? Oh, look at... Oh, I'll do it myself. It's okay. No. You don't... No, don't do that. No. I'll do it myself. It's fine. I have these two breeze blocks on my shoulders, but don't worry about it. It's fine. That's the way I go.
Oh, very subtle. And what's the response like then?
He ignores me.
He ignores you, right. Okay.
Rightly so. But I was just thinking there when you were talking, Lisa, I don't know whether you agree with this or not, but is that... I think still in marriage and relationships and everything else, and even more so now with the bridezillas and groomzillas that we have, is that there's a certain degree of happy ever after. We're happily ever after still. We're still in a Cinderella phase about marriage. We're still in a kind... Nobody lives happily ever after. And that's not a gloomy... It's just a practical... You're happy a while, you're sad a while. You're happy a while, you're sad a while. Or whatever. And I still think we have this notion that, you know, this wifting and wafting up the aisle is going to have some magic spell and then we don't have... It's work, lads. When the romance dies, that's when you're going into the proper relationship.
I love that. It's work, lads. And Lisa, just you're listening intently to John and Mary there. And John mentioned sulking as one response. And I think what your response would be described as a bit of passive aggressive there, I think.
Martyrdom.
Yeah. What do you reckon?
Well,
this is fairly normal.
There are different ways of saying something is the matter. And then it becomes like, am I sulking so I can get attention? Or am I just very withdrawn because I don't know what to do with myself when I'm like this? It's almost like that kind of nearly flooding. I'm overwhelmed. Or it can be a way of levelling the playing field. You weren't nice to me.
Well, it's a kind of say, look, do you really need to ask me what's wrong with me? Because I just can't come out and say it.
Yeah.
Is that a bit of that, like, you know?
Yeah.
God forbid, but it is. It's an awful thing to be doing. It's like holding someone to ransom, I suppose, would be the closest way I could put it to them. But that's what you're really doing. So someone goes, for Christ, what's wrong with you? Yeah. Oh, thanks, somebody cares.
What's martyrdom?
Martyrdom is a little bit of the... there might be something like a projection going on. I want you to feel a bit of my pain. So if I huff like this.
Oh, good.
It can also... But the interesting thing, I think, listening even to both Mary and John is that, you know, when marriage vows are invented, our life expectancy wasn't much beyond the age of 30. There's so much... We're asked... So much more is asked of us now. And we grow. You know, we might have originally started off with this, the passive aggressive or the withdrawn, the sulk and whatever. And then we get to a point where we go, this isn't getting my needs met. I better say what it is if I can be clear about it. And it's about being able to kind of step out of ourselves and tell whoever it is. And I think that's where you come on the life cycle of a relationship. You come into a more mature arena where you're more readily be able to find forgiveness. You don't get so troubled by the other. You're more willing to put yourself in the other person's shoes. And then in the final phase, really, if you're still together, maybe you're liking each other again. You know, you bounce of that. You appreciate the other person's commitment and you're more secure about yourself as a person.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
But is it a kind of luxury, John, you know, really of the 21st century and sort of affluence as an outbreak from feudalism? Because basically that's
exactly
where we were 120 years ago, where, like, you know, a marriage was basically to reproduce financial security, kind of food security, even if basic stuff as that. And we have all this time in our hands now because we live in the world where we do what we do and we've loads of time for thinking.
That's,
you know what I mean?
And that's like, say, the world of the matchmaker was of a time when people had, you know, that marriages were alliances and stuff.
Yes.
But also, there was a lot of... people hadn't the same sense of entitlement that we did then. They didn't expect to be happy clappy. And I think in lots of ways, okay, maybe there was a few horrific marriages, but say certainly in the relationships in our the matchmaker, they don't have this sense of entitlement. They want company. They want a bit of sex, be nice, and all of that. But it's very practical. It's not. It doesn't have this kind of Kim Kardashian big frock. I deserve the best all the time kind of ideas.
Yeah.
And I think that. And I think that did serve for at least more practical and contented relationships in the long run.
Which brings us nicely on to the matchmaker and tell us about it.
But don't Mary.
I didn't know when
this,
we were ever going to say
Is this the first time you've acted alongside Mary?
Well, yeah.
I was all starstruck.
With John Kerry?
I was all starstruck. I was, seriously.
Yeah, it is.
Were you starstruck too, John?
Yeah, very much. Honoured.
What's it been like? It opens in the Everyman in Cork on the 7th of April and runs to Saturday, the 12th of April. But why are you enjoying it so much, John?
I love Keane. I must say, no matter what John B writes, even when he was writing for the Limerick Leader, no matter what he puts pen to paper about, there's a sort of poetry in his words, you know? He's a beautiful way of putting words together, you know? And so I love the language of Keane. I love that kind of flow and the colour of it. And I love that. And the stories are great. And so I'm enjoying that. I suppose the piece is interesting. It's actually a very different piece to put on stage because although we're on stage together all the time, we're still working in two kind of very separate areas. Like it's there's a lot of monologue in it and we interact a few times in the show itself. But mainly it is that, which makes it quite difficult from a performance point of view because you have no one cueing you a line, like, you know what I mean? You have no one to say, well, what did happen? you just have to know what happened. So it's interesting. And it's great. It's a great piece. It's got full of soul. It's of a time. But then again, being on a time when you read through it, you suddenly say,
it's kind of timeless,
you know,
too.
There's a lot of stuff in it that makes a huge amount of sense, you know, and I think his view on society, when you think that he wrote this back in the 60s, you know, he's not afraid to call a spade and he talks about as a culture losing our sort of a natural approach to nature within ourselves as regards our sexuality. And he says this, you know, when you think about it in 1960s rural Ireland or Ireland or any place.
Yeah.
It was talking about, like, you know, it's the establishment telling us what to do. He says, find your own sexuality. Be happy in yourself.
Yeah.
Do, you know, get on with it and do it. Enjoy it, you know?
And there's a certain poignancy in this for you, Mary, as well, because you have done The Matchmaker in the past with the late Mick Lally.
Yeah, well, myself and Mick performed for a long time together. It's directed by Michael Scott. And, you know, we've been working with Michael for years and Michael is directing this show as well. And there is poignancy, but at the same time, I kind of think I've done my mourning of me. I miss him still, of course, because every time even you walk in here, there's memories, and anywhere you go, there's memories. There's theatres, every theatre you've been in, there's memories of Mick, because we've trod the boards. We did the Field together as well, and the Chastitude. So there's a lot of stage as well as television history behind us, but. The Matchmaker and in the nature of it, I think I also performed with Des Keogh, and so I think and I'm looking forward to the Kenny Lunacy. but in that sense, you can make your own of it at any time. So it's quite, because obviously, like any script, the words are always the same. But the nature of it, because there's so many characters in it. You know, how many characters do we play each? I don't know.
At least
7 or 8 each.
Yeah.
So you can make your own of those characters. So it's every time you do it, it's a fresh approach. Sure. Even though they are a series of monologues with a few little bits of interaction.
And as I say, it opens in the Everyman in Cork on Monday, 7th of April, and runs to Saturday, April 12th. I see you're a picture in the paper today in regard to a completely separate production with Frank Kelly.
I in the paper with that as well?
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's Mal. Yeah.
Right.
So yeah.
Where is he?
Yeah.
How do you do
and
that?
Then John is doing Mag Mill.
I have Mag Mill as well in me. So we're
he's doing a show in
so
May.
How do you balance that? Rehearsal for one and starting another. Is it difficult?
With this tranche of The Matchmaker will be finished before I start rehearsal for Mal.
I see.
So, but I'm not. I don't have a huge part in Mull, so I'm looking forward to that. Sitting back with the out feet.
And plenty of people in touch on the subject of relationships. Dara says, "Hi, John. Nice to hear this conversation today. We are 44 years married and back to just being the two of us." There you are. Yeah. And Lorraine in Baltinglass says, "Delighted to hear that John Kenny is so well. Good luck to John and Mary with the new show. The health is good, John."
Great, Johnny.
You're looking well as well.
Yeah, I'm good.
He's
all
putting
well.
Us all to shame with the energy.
Is that right? Awesome. And another text here. "Tell Mary I'm married 19 blissfully wonderful years to yes my soulmate. Okay, I agree there are sad times, but those were when we lost our loved ones. That's how you grow stronger, when you help each other through the good and most importantly the bad times."
Yeah.
Also, that's from Ed Bryan in Gorey. So anyway, as I say, Matchmaker opening in Cork Monday 7th of April. I presume there's more details on the website. Yeah. Everymanpalace.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm just thinking, John? This would be a great table for Game of Bridge, wouldn't it?
It
would,
there's actually
no hope I could kick you from here anyway.
No, there'd be no kicking under the table.
And can we just make a special move RTE.
We will.
For the Culchies.
Okay.
The Culchies can't get here early in the morning.
Okay.
And we come in at our stress level for the day. The two of us all were stuck in traffic for hours.
I see.
So move RTE.
Okay, move RTE.
Yeah.
To the M50.
The M50, I think so, yeah.
Mary McAvoy, John Kenny, and also Relationships Counsellor Lisa O'Hara, thank you for joining us this morning. We're back in a moment.
Text 51551. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.